Big 10 Plus 4 is a member of Odd Pods Media and ASAP All Sports All Plays Network. Probably would help if I put us in the stream, huh, Tony?
Oh, just a tiny bit. I mean, we could do it. They're not going to hear us. And we could give a great show, but they're not going to know it.
Good morning and welcome to Big 10 Plus 4. We are Sometimes College Sports with Midwest Perspective, and we bring you it by being blue collar and blue blood. I am Sam Sprunger, your host today, Dalton out. For the remainder of the year, which is just 2 days, Tony. That's all it is.
I don't know. When you say it like that, it's like, man, he's out for the year. Oh, man, he's going to be gone a while.
He's out the rest of the year.
He's going to be gone for a hot minute.
Tony Hollinsworth on the other side of the screen, if you're watching on the video. Wow. We are right up on it, Tony. We are up on the new year. So quickly this year has gone to get us to this point. We have a couple of topics that we're gonna wrap up. We're gonna wrap up our coaching changes that happened in the Big Ten. We're gonna talk about the last piece that came in chronological order to finish up those. And honestly, this is truthful. I don't know if the Big Ten's done with their coaching changes. But to this point, we will wrap up our third part. We're going to talk a little bit about the Pinstripe Bowl. We've got a bowl recap in our pocket that we're going to talk about as well. And we might have a little bit more to talk about big semifinals tomorrow. I mean, all in all, bowl season's great. But there's only three games that matter, and we only know what two of them are right now, and those happen tomorrow. So, like, it's the picture is going to get a little bit more clear after tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll. And it was funny. I was actually seeing a meme yesterday. Did you ever see the movie Grown Ups with Rob Schneider, David Spade, Adam Sandler?
Yeah.
So the part where Rob Schneider's
I'm not Dalton. I do watch movies.
I have to ask, because sometimes people see movies I think are great, and then they're like the whole Tree Fitty thing. You'd be surprised when people don't know what Tree Fitty means. Yep. I'm like, y'all are wrong. Just know y'all are wrong.
Go ahead. Sorry.
There's a part in Grown Ups where Rob Schneider introduces his daughters. Two of them are absolutely gorgeous, and then one represents, Rob Schneider literally in all of his Rob Schneiderness, just in female form. The extremely attractive one, they're like, what, Saturday's college football semi-playoff games look like. And it's, Georgia, Ohio State's the really attractive one. TCU, Michigan is the Rob Schneider looking one. It's like, that's not sexy. No, nobody really wants to see that.
Well, and the way things go and the way things easily could go tomorrow is that will be the good game, and the Ohio State Georgia game will be the absolute horrible one to watch.
Oh yeah, what
happened many times.
You say, I don't know if it would happen, but watch Ohio State Georgia be something like 10-7, 10-3, 7-3, even just like a completely defensively. If you're a big fan of defense, great game. Otherwise, just dump, boring game. Nothing fun is happening. It's just
terrible. That's a Big Ten style game if that ends up that way,
right?
No matter how good some of those SEC teams have been, they've put up points.
yes.
I'm excited. This is it's a first. Dalton talked about that on Wednesday. This is a first. We haven't been able to experience the playoff with vested interest in both games, like as a conference, and That doesn't necessarily mean that we think that they're both Big Ten teams are going to win, but it's one of those that we could have an all Big Ten final, much like the SEC has had multiple times.
Yeah.
SEC championship games. Basically, it's one of those that the Big Ten finally has an opportunity to be that that level this year.
Well, and to be honest, I mean, you look at last year's, it was literally just a repeat of the SEC championship. You know, if, again, hypothetically, as we kind of talked about last week, if, you know, it is Ohio State and Michigan, what better way to represent the national title game than the biggest game in the Big Ten with the biggest, probably one of, if not the biggest, you know, rivalry in college football than Ohio State and Michigan. So
I still contend the world will blow up.
Oh, I think it will. So, I mean, how fitting, how
maybe
fitting
at midnight,
start the new,
maybe
how
at
fitting
midnight.
To start the new year though. Like, hey, this is going to be 2023. This is what we got to look forward to. Ohio State versus Michigan. Everybody's like, what?
Yeah.
And then just blows up from there.
Think of that. Nobody would have contended. I honestly, if it is Michigan, Ohio State, I don't know that there would be anybody that would say, yeah, I knew that was coming. Nobody. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Because, you know, I saw a lot of people contending kind of what I thought with Michigan, that while they're going to be good, they're going to be down compared to what they were last year. They just didn't, you know, we didn't see this happening the way that it did, to where Michigan was the more dominant team this year compared to what they were last year. Honestly, I don't know that I saw Georgia being this good as they were, you know, as they were last year. Right. I mean, they're comparative to what they were last year. They don't have the defense that is absolutely mind-boggling like it was last year, but they still have the eighth best defense in the country. Yep. In the country.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that, we both said that we feel that it's going to be Georgia, Michigan in the championship game.
Yeah.
And without giving away what I think, but one thing you got to take into consideration is what Michigan did against Illinois, which was a better defense. Georgia's pretty darn good, you know, so there may be it's going to be a dogfight, no pun intended, because of Georgia, but it's going to be a dogfight, I think, if they end up playing each other.
Yeah, and I'll be honest too. I mean, kind of like what we also mentioned, how much of the Michigan versus Illinois game was just Michigan not really being focused on the game in front of them and more being focused on the game against Ohio State.
And that could be, but if it ends up that way. If it's Michigan, Ohio State, I don't know how it's going to play out, because I don't know that Ohio State would have. Never mind. I'll get into that if it happens. How about that?
I hear you say, yeah, I think there's a lot of hypotheticals, and I don't know if you probably feel the same way. I know for me, it's just after that Michigan game, it left a lot of questions about Ohio State. You know, they stumbled against Michigan. You know, Michigan won in the trenches, both offensively and on the defensive line, and they mainly beat Ohio State through the air on big plays. So it does kind of make me wonder, now that they've had, actually, realistically, Ohio State's had a month off since.
Mm-hmm.
They've had 3 weeks to know who they're going to play. You know, how does Ohio State, you know, bounce back from that after a month? So that to me is probably what makes it the most confusing, is how do we really gauge Ohio State now after a month?
Well, like, and that's what made it even more difficult to try to come up with who I thought would win between them and Georgia. I mean, I contend still that it doesn't matter that they lost to Michigan. I still think if you put the Joes up against one another, Ohio State's, if not the second best team in the country.
Yeah.
And so I can't contend it was easy to come up with Georgia winning. It just it wasn't, because Ohio State has got those guys that if they perform, they're almost as unbeatable as any team that you would say is the best team in the country. You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying? I think they are comparable and on par with Georgia.
Yeah. Like on paper,
they just have a fault that got really exposed on a very national stage. You know what I mean?
And what's even worse was it was their last game of the actual season, barring, you know, what happened with USC. So it's like, okay, this was the end of Ohio State that we saw this year until possibly a bowl game. So that to me is what really messes it up. Like you said, on paper, when you break everything down, you know, you could even go as far as to look at the number of 5-star recruits that Ohio State has and the number of 4-stars versus what Michigan and like Georgia have, and Ohio State is just dominating up there with the number of, you know, 4- and 5-star athletes. I think when I look, they have 16 rated 5-star athletes to Michigan's like 4.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, like you said, on paper, the way everything looks, this should be, like you said, a team that just hangs with the absolute best of them. But it's one of those, again, it puts us into a lot of question marks, because we basically saw our last game of Ohio State a month ago. So we don't know how Ohio State's going to, you know, rally and, you know, come back from that. And they've lost. I don't really count Njigba as much, because they've done pretty much everything without him for about 80% of the year. What does kind of make me a little more interested is the Travion Henderson being out. That makes it a little interesting. But again, they've done it even without him, but they rely more on their passing attack than they do their run game anyway. But biggest question I think you and I both have is defensively, how do they rebound? Because it wasn't really offense wasn't clicking for Ohio State. They were able to put up points. It was defensively they were let down.
Yeah. Well, going to be an interesting day tomorrow, seeing how those games play out, because, you know, with as crazy as the season's been, it's one of those that you can see and have a clear thought of your path of who you pick, and then it goes completely opposite of the way you think it's going to go. I wouldn't be shocked if any of the 4 teams won tomorrow. Honestly, I would not. Because they're now, would I be surprised to where, oh wow, you know, TCU did end up or Ohio State did and you're like, it doesn't surprise me. Yeah. Let me just say, Ohio State and Georgia, neither team winning will even probably raise an eyebrow unless it's just such a dominant way that they won.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised, not shocked, if TCU beats Michigan.
Yeah. And I would say, compared to last year, this is probably about the only time you could say that about the semifinal playoff games.
I wouldn't argue.
Because when you looked at Georgia versus Michigan last year in the semifinals, everybody was like,
unfair matchup.
Yeah, we're like, Georgia's going to win. Like, that's not even fair. Georgia's just going to, you know, beat the brakes off them. And they did. And then it was Alabama versus Cincinnati. And we're like, really? You're going to give Alabama the one cupcake game out of the whole
playoffs? That was the closer of the two games.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, it was no offense to Cincinnati, but kind of looking at it from the fan perspective, you know, they finally let Cincinnati in. They're the only Group 5 school to ever do it. And you're just kind of like, and you're putting them up against Alabama. Like, come on, man. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's to see how things play out. Interested. To see what, you know, what can we take from that to kind of see what the championship's going to look like? Because if it's the two that we expect, it's going to be a really good championship game. I really do think that.
Yeah, I definitely think so. If it is who we probably think, with Georgia, Michigan, I don't know if we'll, I could probably say both of us are choosing those as like our kind of light picks. Like, we're not fully locked into that, or think it's more of a light thing. Because like you said, anything
I'll go on the record, just because then I can say, well, look,
I was right.
Georgia, Michigan.
Well, I've been wrong every other time. Yes. The only one I'll for sure lock in is Michigan over TCU. I'll lock that one in.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move to the second quarter. We got some stuff we need to talk about still. All right. Moving to the second quarter, we are going to shift a little bit to the Big Ten coaching world. We've had three coaching moves. We've had Nebraska firing Scott Frost, then hiring Matt Rhule. We had Wisconsin, and both of these were in season. Wisconsin fired Paul Christ, brought in Luke Fickle. Sorry, geez, I can't believe it. Which he ended up coaching in Wisconsin's bowl game. Still yep. an unusual thing that normally happens with an incoming new coach. We did have last year Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman coached for as an interim filling in when Brian Kelly left for LSU. He filled in for Notre Dame's bowl game as the head coach and was the incoming head coach, but he was already part of the program. Like there wasn't much of a transition other than he had the headset making the main calls. But Luke Fickle in Wisconsin, and then shortly after the Big Ten championship, and I don't know if you saw any like upswelling right before the Big Ten championship game about this, but Jeff Brohm left Purdue to go to Louisville, and Purdue hires Illinois' DC, which we talked about this the other day, number two defense in the country statistically and things like that, number two defense in the country. Ryan Walters comes over to Purdue to start in West Lafayette. We talked about Jeff Brohm leaving. We kind of see that as it wasn't necessarily a promotion to a higher placement school necessarily in our thoughts, but we saw it. Okay. We're not damning him because it's going home. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about the hire at Purdue with Ryan Walters? Is this a good fit for Purdue?
I mean, I think so. You looking at track record, I mean, there's something about him that people like. You know, at 25, he was hired onto, if I remember right, it's Mizzou's coaching staff.
I think you're right.
Well, technically, yeah, he's a student assistant for Colorado, Arizona, but his first official, coordinating job or,
actual position job.
was at Mizzou in 2016. As a co-defensive coordinator / safeties coach. And then he officially became the coordinator in 2018 and 2020. And, you know, he did that at 25. So that's pretty impressive. So that gives you some type of idea that there are a lot of people that respect this man that, hey, he can do pretty well, you know, teaching. 'Cause, you know, you probably know this better than I do being a teacher. You know, there's the old saying, those who can't do, they teach. And he went undrafted into the NFL. And I'm trying to look and see if, okay. So Jeff Brohm was more of an offensive coach and, you know, Ryan's going to be more of a defensive. So that will be interesting to see the change. Cause we saw that Purdue had a very prolific offense. Now defensively, they weren't bad, but there wasn't anything really fearful about Purdue's defense, but that was also a lot in part due to a lot of their big players being drafted last year. I mean, you look at Kalifanakis, you know, Karloftis. Galifianakis. Yeah. You know,
Galifianakis is a movie comedian. Star and comedian.
Yeah. So, you know, the Greek name. I was like, that's what it was. Kafkas.
Yeah.
You know, so you kind of saw Purdue's defense take a little bit of a step back, which now with the addition of Ryan Walters, I think that will be, you know, rectified pretty well because, you know, head coaches, if they're previous defensive or offensive coordinators, that's typically where they like to focus more on coaching on that side of the ball. Now, obviously, as a head coach, he'll look at things a little bit differently, having to see the whole picture. But defense will be a little bit more of his baby. So I hope for his sake that he hires a good offensive coordinator to help run the offense. Obviously, you guys get Hudson Card from the Texans, which isn't bad. You know,
from Texas.
I know. I'm getting all confused. It's early, Sam. It's early. You know, gets it from Texas, and he didn't do bad when he was filling in after Sam Ellinger left. So he, if I remember right, I think they went 6-6. They went to a bowl game. I believe they lost the bowl game, if I remember correctly.
Yes, they got beat by Washington. Or you're talking about Texas. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Texas, yep. Back when they had Hudson Card.
I got you. Sorry.
Yeah. If they were even
reading something. Sorry. I am listening. I just couldn't. Yeah. Anyways, I'm going to stop reading.
That's okay. Anyway, you are right, though. Texas did lose to Washington last night, which kind of figured that may or may not happen. Washington is a really good team. So Hudson Card isn't bad. He's a proven starter. It will be interesting to see how Ryan Walters, if he potentially tries to cater the offense around him until they kind of find a more permanent solution at quarterback. If they have a younger classman that's maybe on the roster that they maybe want to try, or again, kind of the beauty of the transfer portal, you know, somebody else may be out there in play next year that may want to come to Purdue when Card leaves. So I think it's a good hire. I think it's what Purdue needs. I think also, because if you looked at Illinois' defense, I don't know what their actual record for penalties were. I feel like they were a pretty disciplined group. Because, I mean, you don't get to
that's
be
a big
that
thing
high
in West Lafayette this last year.
How many? You said 10?
No, that's a big thing for Purdue in the Big Ten this past year.
Yeah, it was penalties. So if
on the defensive side especially.
Yeah, so if he can bring that in to Purdue and hopefully, you know, start to correct that, you know, this will be a Purdue team that will at least be in contention for the West again.
Yeah. I'm not upset with Ryan Walters' hire. And there's kind of a reason why being a historically a Purdue fan and really loving the fact that Joe Tiller instilled the basketball on grass and, you know, offense first, but he made sure he had a defensive coach, a good defensive coordinator. And that was Brock Spack. I was a big proponent of Brock Spack being the next head coach at Purdue, but it wasn't because necessarily of that nostalgia thing. It was, he is a defensive guy. That's why because if there is a bad side of the ball for Purdue, it is the defense. That's not saying that they haven't, like you said, haven't been decent or at least formidable to allow Purdue's offense to be that dominant, you know, side of the ball, but it's never been a domination thing. And, he said, Ryan Walters even said, he wants that high-flying dynamic offense to be still in West Lafayette. So that's why I think he's going to, I don't know that he's going to call the plays. He may be one of those that I'm going to call the defense. And I know coaches that way. I was that way as a football coach. I was the offensive side of the ball. I told my defensive coordinator, I said, this is your side of the ball. You call it, you handle anybody that does defense. I knew the stuff. I could supplement as a coach, but I let him do the thing. And you know what? We had sides of the ball that were pretty darn dominant overall because we had a coach worrying just about that side. That's not to say, Ray, I didn't know what was going on the defense, because ultimately I was the head coach, but it's not that I didn't know what was going on the defensive side. I just knew that, you know what, I'm going to let you defense. I'm going to offense. And it worked out well. Other coaches want to have, even though they're not the offensive coordinator and their defensive mind, they still like calling the plays because ultimately it does fall back on them. And I get both sides. I don't damn either side or either style. Yeah. But I hope that Ryan Walters finds somebody that he believes is going to be that keep that high flying dynamic offense in and going. I don't know if you find a Mike Leach disciple. I wouldn't mind the air raid. That style right. of offense. It's kind of, you know, I mean, it's, but you know what? I'm not going to guess on what he wants to do. I'm just hopeful that he's addressed it already. Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing is get your home run hitter on that side of the ball and then figure out what we've got. Yeah. It may be a couple of years before they contend mm-hmm. again. But they could get to the point where maybe down the road, they're like a Wisconsin has been historically since the 90s, where they've been really, really good. They contend every once in a while, legitimately contend, like nationally once mm-hmm. in a while. But for the most part, you're getting, you know, a real solid game out of a season out of them, you know. And a losing record or a close to 500 record is an anomaly rather than the norm. And I think if there's anything that people can want to expect from Purdue mm-hmm. is let's get away from the 500 being the, hey, that was a successful season, and let's make it 9 wins constantly to where we are, okay, hey, we had one great season this year. We made it to a New Year's Six. You know, I mean, make that the norm of regularity rather than closer to 500. Yeah. I'm not delusional to think that any coach, and I'm not kidding here, any coach coming into West Lafayette will ever stay there and turn West Lafayette into a national contender year in and year out. It's just not going to happen. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But let's raise the norm a little bit. And I think Ryan Walters could be that stepping stone to where I Jeff Brom did a great job. I thank you for what he did mm-hmm. because after Joe Tiller, we had Danny Hope, Daryl Hazel. Mm-hmm. They were just not good. And then Jeff Brom came in and Purdue was reverting back to that dumpster fire of the 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought it back and he instilled that offensive side. Let's keep that. Let's build the defense. And I think that's what we can hope for as Purdue fans. And overall, it makes the conference better. You want your teams to be competitive mm-hmm. outside of when they play your team anyway. Like that's mm-hmm. That should be your ultimate goal. Now you can have your hatred, but you can't hate every single team. You know what I mean? You just can't.
Some people beg to differ, sir.
Well, those people are very unhappy, miserable people then.
Yes, yes.
That's but, as simple as I can get.
But no, I mean, I agree because it, with you know, even from a fan perspective, if some people are arguing, you know, well, I can't hate everybody other than my team. Which to you is sweeter? Like, you know, so we'll take Michigan versus Michigan State. You know, you can look at last year, you can look at this year. You know, both ranked underdogs. Michigan State was to Michigan. Last year, Michigan State upset Michigan and beat them. Like, you know, would you rather beat a team when they're at their absolute best? Because to me, that's bigger bragging rights. Like, you look at Michigan versus Ohio State. Like, what did Michigan do? Like, they came in as the underdogs. Like, we beat what was considered at the time the second best team in the country, and we did it no problem, hands down. They got bragging rights for another year.
Also, let's not misconstrue what I just said.
Yeah.
You don't have to like them.
No, you don't. You don't have to like
them. You just can't hate them all.
Yeah.
I mean, I have dislike for every single team but Purdue in the Big Ten, and there's a reason for that. Purdue's my favorite team.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to, there's a reason why. Now, do I hate Northwestern? No. But I'm not rooting for them against Purdue at any point.
Right.
And there might be times I hope they lose because they may be in a position that if they lose, it benefits Purdue. So that's what I'm getting at. I can not like a team, but still not hate them.
Yeah.
Now you go to Bloomington. Yeah. Yeah. The hatred's real. I go to South Bend.
Yeah,
but you know, it's only on the football side for South Bend, but
of course,
but yeah, it's I hope that Purdue is able to rebound and build forward. Keep what they have, at least some semblance, or even upgrade it offensively to where it's a formidable offense. It's dominant at times, and then build that defensive side up to where, oh, hey, look, you know, we've gone to more than two Rose Bowls historically.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I've been alive for 50% of Purdue's Rose Bowl
appearances.
And I've got people that are Ohio State fans that are a third my age and have seen more Rose Bowls from Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's, I'm not bitter. I just would like to have more hope for those things, you know, and if it happens, great. If it doesn't, you know what, move on and go down the road. I think it will work well. So
no, I do think he, Ryan Walters. I had a brain fart there for a minute. I do hope that he lives up to Jeff Brohm's standards, though, of being called the spoiler makers and going 3-1 against, you know, top ranked national teams and spoiling their.
Well, they do play Ohio State next year, so
it is possible. There's his first test. If he can beat Ohio State and spoil it again,
yep,
he'll be in a good spot.
All right. Well, we've got some. We're running just slightly heavy right now. Which is great, because I felt like I've talked way too much. But let's go to the half. We've got some basketball on the other side, and then we've got our headlines afterwards as well. So let's go to the break.
You are listening to Big Ten Plus Four, hosted on Anchor and StreamYard.
Hey, this is Russ.
This is Kyle.
This is Michelle.
From the Infectious Groove Podcast.
Join us every Monday for the most fun you can have with a music podcast. The Infectious Groove Podcast uses a positive and fun approach as we take time every week to share our jammy jams, then dig into a thought-provoking topic discussing all decades and genres of music. You can find the Infectious Groove Podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can head to infectiousgroovepodcast.com to find us there and subscribe. We might have a controversial opinion here or there, but we always have fun with it.
Oh, I'm sure I'll say something dumb.
Subscribe to the Infectious Groove Podcast, part of the Odd Pods Media Network.
Hi, I'm Tina Jaramillo.
And I'm Hillary Doherty.
And we host the Muck Podcast, where we discuss the dark and sometimes weird true stories in American politics.
Hey, Tina, did you know that Elvis crashed the Nixon White House for the sole purpose of getting a DEA badge, and it worked?
What? Or how a gun control advocate senator out of California engaged in gun trafficking with notorious gang leader Shrimp Boy?
Shrimp Boy, I remember him. Okay, so, you know, we cover all of that and more from maladies, madness, mischief, and murder in U.S. politics.
And we also host a bi-weekly interview segment called Lil Muck.
We interview politicians, journalists, activists, and others who share their experiences in politics.
Find the Muck Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on social media at the Muck Podcast.
All right, we move to the third quarter. Tony, we've got a lot happening on the basketball side. We talked the other day on Wednesday about kind of the way too early bracketology on the men's side, and how right now the Big Ten men's conference, if you take the first four out and the next four out, have 11 of their 14 teams in contention in December to be in the bracket in March, and we all were thinking that this was going to be a down year for the Big Ten. Now, we go to yesterday, which Thursday, the 29th, the Big Ten didn't do so well on the men's side in one of their games. Now we will address Nebraska and Iowa played, and Nebraska won.
Yeah. Nebraska
beat Iowa, so Iowa falls to 0-2, I believe, in the Big Ten.
And yes.
That's not a great way to start, you know, flip the calendar, is starting your two conference games that you play before the regular season starts full swing at the new year. You're 0-2. That's not a good hole to be in, especially when you know, people are thinking that Iowa could be just as good as they were last year.
Yep.
And they shared a Big Ten title. So like, they didn't. I'm sorry. It was Wisconsin and they were in contention for a Big Ten title last year. And it just, I don't know where Iowa comes in at now, but the one I was getting at was Central Michigan stuns Michigan in Ann Arbor, beats them by 2. I believe it was in Ann Arbor. Maybe it was at Central.
It was in Ann Arbor. Yeah, okay,
I thought it was. Yep. 63-61. Michigan's 7-5. This is the second straight year that they have kind of flopped out of the gate. Do you see them rebounding to where they were last year? Right or not, they righted the ship enough to where they got in comfortably. They didn't have to play in the first four. They were in the tournament. Do you think they rebound to that standard?
Yeah, I mean, I think they do. To me, I mean, this, like you said, this is a team that they always start out slow. And I think maybe because it is the out of conference games, you know, this is, I think, one of the last ones before it's primarily just Big Ten teams that they're facing off against.
I think, you know, starting the new year that they start doing the conference. I don't know that there might be an occasional, like, one or two teams might have a out of conference still to play, but I think pretty much once the new year hits, they flip the schedule too.
Yeah. So to me, I think they do, because it's a little bit easier to be able to go up against somebody that you know than somebody that you don't know. You know, they don't play Central Michigan all that often. You know, if they do, what, maybe once a year. They're not playing them twice a year like they play Big Ten teams. So, I mean, it's kind of a one shot. Central Michigan comes in as really the underdogs. They came in 4-8. And so I don't think Michigan took it maybe as seriously as they should have. And we've seen that bite a lot of teams before. Like, yeah, we're not going to take them as seriously as we need to. And then look what happens. You know, you end up taking the L for it. I'm trying to look at some of the stats from the game. I did not watch the game last night. I was more interested in another game of a professional sport that my team won. I was happy. Bufkin scored 16 points. McDaniel scored 10. You know, Juwan Howard's son, he scored 12. Dickinson scored 13. So, I mean, a lot of their primary starters, and for whatever reason, they're all guards, did really well. And their bench did okay, but I mean, for Central Michigan, but that was really their strong suit. I mean, Zarzula was one of their guards on the bench. He got 19 points. Bass, another guard, got 16, and then Taylor got 12. So this was honestly just a Central Michigan team that overall their bench was just better than Michigan's. And I think that is one of the things where when you look at a lot of these teams, professional and college, that's where they start to hurt, is how well can your bench do? Like, when you're trying to rotate those starters, you know, get them rest, not trying to play them for, you know, the full amount of time, or give them even a breather, or keep them towards the end if they're fouling out like Michigan State typically does, you know, keep them towards when it matters. And then, you know, hopefully they can hold on enough after they foul out to take home the win. Love my Spartans, but I hate that they're that bad with penalties. But that's really the big thing, is Central. It was really Central Michigan's bench versus Michigan's, and Central Michigan won hands down, because even their second leading scorer on their bench, McCaskill, scored 8 points, and combined total, Michigan's entire bench scored 8 points.
I think this is troublesome for any Michigan fan. It should be. Let's say it this way. Yeah. This is the second year in a row that they've started this way with higher expectations.
Yep.
And they're starting this way. I don't recall exactly the intricates of the story that I saw, because I only saw the headline and a quick little like introduction blurb or whatever. But Juwan Howard's had some issues again this year. That's the third straight year. When are we going to start thinking that maybe this coaching move maybe wasn't your best move? He's a hothead.
Yep.
And for the last 2 years, he's taken high amounts of talent and expectations and very meekly come out of the gates. Nobody expected Purdue to be the number one team in the country. Nope. But you don't think that they would be saying, well, what's wrong with Purdue if they lose three of those, first games that they shouldn't have lost?
Yeah.
And then they also lose to Gonzaga. There's something wrong with Purdue. There would be people questioning because they do have some talent. But you know what? They came firing out of the gate. They blew out Gonzaga. They blew out Duke. That's a coaching thing. Yes, you've got the horses, but it's still coaching.
Yeah.
I think Michigan's got problems because, you know what? Even if they do come back to what they were last year, in the tournament to where they're comfortably in. What were they? They were an 11 seed. Yes, they won a couple of games. Yes, they made it to the Sweet 16. But you know what? There were people talking about them being national championship contenders.
Mm-hmm.
And they struggled. I don't think they should have been in the tournament unless they were going to be in the first four games. That's the only way I think they should have been in there. And IU beat them in the tournament after being down by like 18 points. They came back and won against Michigan in the Big Ten tournament. And IU had to play in the first four games.
Yeah.
But Michigan didn't. And I'm not saying that, they didn't deserve to be in the first four, but I don't know. I think there might be some issues there. I don't know.
And you kind of wonder real quick too, before we move on, you kind of wonder too, where is Juwan Howard's loyalty? Cause I mean, he was considered a finalist for the Lakers head coaching job last year after that whole Michigan debacle. So at least when Harbaugh did it, he was coming off of a pretty good winning season. He finally beat Ohio State. He beat the Big Ten became the Big Ten champion. So you think, okay, maybe he'll ride off into the sunset with that. Did it again this year. There's a lot of talks. He may go into the NFL. So where does his loyalties lie? Where does his focus lie? I kind of wonder the same thing about Juwan Howard. I wonder how much of this was, well, I'm technically already here, so I'll come back. But I mean, if somebody else offers me a job that's better, that's what I'm going to go do. So that's also what I kind of wonder is how prepared was Juwan to come into this season and how much does he really want to be there?
I think Michigan's got a lot to look at with their coaches just because you might have coaching changes in both sports this year. So
yeah,
let's jump to the women's side really quick. Dalton, very happy man last night because the Michigan State Lady Spartans upset the number four team in the country, the Hoosiers down in Bloomington. IU falls to the Spartans in East Lansing. And that's huge because we literally just talked on Wednesday that the women have two teams in the top four. They're playing really well. And then IU goes to East Lansing and gets beat. Like I was looking at the box score, like Michigan State never trailed at the end of a quarter. They held the Hoosiers in check and were able to pull the upset off. I'm excited about this upcoming Big Ten season.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, because of some of these teams that aren't expected to do a lot, pulling some of these things off, these upsets. And that's the great thing. That's why I always liked the men's side too. I just never really paid too much attention to the women's side, but I'm starting to, and it's getting pretty competitive and pretty brutal, for each of those teams. I saw Purdue lost to Iowa. Iowa's 3-0 in the conference, and they're not in the top 10. They're not one of the two teams in the top 10 that we're talking about, but they're good enough to, they've lost three games, but it's also, they lost to UConn, I believe. And they lost one other game that they should have or could have, and you wouldn't hold it against them. But then they were upset in one game. So it happens. I mean, everybody gets upset. So, or most of the time, everybody gets upset in some fashion or manner.
Right.
But look out for Iowa, because you've got Ohio State and IU there that are in the top 10. But then you have Iowa, who is – Caitlin Clark is the best player in the conference. She just is. So anytime you have the best player in the conference, you've got to look out and make sure that you've got them in check. You know, if you're going to let Caitlin Clark blow up, you've got to make darn sure that you've got all the rest in check. If you're going to beat Iowa. Iowa's good. So,
Caitlin, you mentioned Caitlin Clark. I mean, she's averaging almost 27 points a game, or averaging almost seven assists per game. And then defensively, she's averaging, you know, 7.5 rebounds per game, almost 2 steals a game. And
she's a machine.
0.4 blocks. Yeah. She's leading Iowa in just about every statistical category there is for that women's team. Yeah. And I mean, you talked about they lost to UConn. They lost 86-79, so I mean it was close. They did get blown out a little bit by North Carolina State the following, but then they wholeheartedly handed it to Iowa State, 70-57. Yeah. So this
and
is
Iowa State thumped Michigan State, for a while, but then Michigan State got back into it. So the Spartans aren't going to be a pushover in the Big Ten either. Purdue's done well. They've got a good record. Illinois is going to be one of those, I think, that could maybe sneak in there and get some wins against some of those higher teams too. So it's going to be an exciting season. One last note before we go to the fourth quarter. We talked about the CFP semifinals, including Michigan and Ohio State, that take place tomorrow. Both of the women's teams are going to be in action at 1 o'clock tomorrow before either of those games kick off. And they're playing each other. So Michigan and Ohio State play in Columbus on Saturday in front of the semifinals, football semifinals for each of those schools. So it's kind of I know that it wasn't planned that way.
No.
But at the same time, it's kind of cool that both of them are playing each other on the day that their football teams are playing for the first time on the same day in the CFP too. So.
And it's a big ranked matchup. It's number 3 Ohio State versus
number 3 and 12
Michigan.
Or okay, 14. That's what it is. Yeah. So like it's a good matchup too on top.
Yes.
And Michigan's been in the top 10 this year. They've just lost a couple that dropped them out. So it is potentially a good matchup in the conference that matters. So we need to move quickly. Let's go to headlines. Okay, so for our headlines, we're going to jump right into Dalton's headline. We've got him, and then we'll move on from there. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
All right.
For the Dalton Daily, I wanted to take a look at something really merry and bright during this holiday season. Of course, there's always some kinds of feel-good stories. A lot of them don't really do with sports at this time of the year, just given the holidays and the nature of things. But one certainly did, and it did in the Big Ten. Down in Bloomington, Indiana, a basketball player named Anthony Leal, who's a junior for the Hoosiers, actually was the 2020 Mr. Basketball out of Bloomington South, plays for the Indiana Hoosiers. He has a sister, Lauren, who actually played basketball at DePaul University before transferring to Indiana University to finish out this last week, graduating as just a regular student there in Bloomington. And what was so special about the moment between the Leals is there's a video out on Twitter of Anthony and Lauren's mom recording as Lauren opened up a present from Anthony. And the present, as she goes through and is reading the card that's given to her, ends up being a student debt relief that Anthony Leal bought for his sister with the NIL money that he's made throughout this season and prior. So he completely wiped out the student debt that Lauren had, because at DePaul University, which is a D3, it's non-scholarship. Mm-hmm. So she still had student debt there. And as we said, she just finished graduating at Indiana. And there was a bit of back and forth. I'll read some of the quotes. The quote says, from the card, You have a spark of goodness that brought into the world. You radiate kindness and bring happiness to so many people, especially me. Hey, sis, I wanted to let you know how much I look up to you and admire who you are. Your soul is beautiful, and you are the best role model ever. There is no doubt that I have made it to where I am today because of you. Someone like you deserves no burdens or restrictions in life, and I feel like the best way to help you with that is by... And then Lauren pauses, and she looks over at Anthony, and she says in the video, I don't even know how much that is. Anthony says, I do. It's zero now. A really just heartfelt moment, and really kind of shine a good light, as Anthony went on to post on social media, that this is what NIL can do. NIL certainly has its problems. It certainly has certain things that it still needs to kind of work out. But we've seen so many instances of student athletes using it for good. Mm-hmm. And Anthony Leal paying off his sister's student debt was a tremendous thing, and something that certainly deserves a spotlight in general. But around the Christmas time, really, really kind of brings it all home in all kinds of emotions and really makes it heartfelt. So that is the Dalton Daily. Congratulations to the Leals.
All right. That's a good good headline from Dalton. A pretty cool story. And so we're going to move right along. We're running up on it, so we need to be quick. Let's get to the Tony Tribune.
Yeah, so this is going to be a little bit of a quick one. And for those who maybe don't follow the Chicago Bears like Sam and I do, the Chicago Bears are not my main NFL team, but they are my second NFL team. I've always grown up loving Da Bears.
Yes, sir. But
just recently, Da Bears was informed that their president and CEO, Ted Phillips, is retiring after spending almost 40 years with the organization. So the big fish that is out there in the pond that they may be looking at to try to recruit back into the NFC North is Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're a Big Ten fan like we are, maybe a little upsetting. I mean, he was the man that basically orchestrated getting USC and UCLA into the conference, you know, expanding the Big Ten even more. And I think he's done a fantastic job. I think he's been one that, aside from the SEC, this is another conference that people look to Kevin Warren as a leader of their conference, and they say this is who we want to try to emulate, and this is what we want to try to do. I would put him right up there as far as, you know, the top five commissioners. So it's going to be a little hurtful if he potentially leaves. There's been nothing guaranteed. Obviously, it's just he's the biggest name out there that they may or may not try to pursue. He has ties to the NFC North, having been a senior executive for both the Lions and the Vikings at one point. So he'd be completing a trilogy of the NFC North teams with Da Bears. So hopefully he stays with the Big Ten, but that's probably the biggest thing that I saw broke yesterday when they had mentioned that Ted Phillips was going to retire.
Yeah, it's one of those that Ted Phillips has done some decent things, but I haven't been extremely happy with him as an executive with the Bears. More times than not, I've been unhappy.
I mean, just remember, he did help orchestrate the 1985 Bears, the greatest collection of humans ever opposed on a defense in mankind history.
I'm talking about from my time when I was aware of what was going on type thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah. All right. From the Sam Sentinel, I went a little a fun way to kind of wrap up the year. I went through some NIL deals, just looking through a list and the funnest or, you know, the most interesting. And I found the tastiest deal in NIL history. There are no shortages of, and I found this on an article called from bestcolleges.com, college football biggest NIL deals is the name of the article. I don't even know. I could find it, I guess, maybe who wrote it, but there are a lot of people, Joseph Rios from Best Colleges, a lot of people in football with the last name of Reese, R-E-E-S-E. So what do you think of when you hear that word? You think Reese's peanut butter cups. So yep. Reese's actually went in and they call it Reese's University, and they have 12 athletes with the last name of Reese that are getting NIL deals because of their last name and that they play college football. One being James Reese the fourth at Tennessee State. Then you have Andrew Reese at Delaware State, Brody Reese at Tulsa, Cameron at Troy, Courtney at UNLV, David at the Florida, James, like I said, at Tennessee State, John, this is John Reese Bellow, but John Reese at Auburn, Max at Eastern Michigan, Michael at Duke, Otis at Mississippi, Quentin at Liberty, and Richard at Baylor. All of those 12 young men are getting NIL deal from Reese's because of their last name. It's fun because you know what, then you can, I'm waiting for memorabilia, you know, like, you know, the mini helmets that have the Reese's logo on it and that bright orange. Orange is my favorite color, so it will grab my attention if they do. You could almost have a Browns helmet with a Reese's logo on it, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But that's just kind of the fun side. NIL, and Dalton talked about it in his headline, NIL has a lot of good that can come out of it, and that has had a lot of good come out of it.
Yeah.
It's got a bad rap because of the way it was implemented. The yep. NCAA dropped the ball on how they could manage it and regulate it by just letting it start with no guidelines, and then all of a sudden they're trying to wrangle it in. And so it's there are things that are not good about it, but there are also some fun and great things that are happening with it, much like the Leals in Bloomington too. So that's the Sam Sentinel, just kind of a lighthearted, fun look at what the NIL has offered us in the time that we, and I love that there are companies that are making it fun rather than it's just strictly business. Now, don't get me wrong. These kids have things that they're doing that is business-wise good for Reese's. Mm-hmm. But at least the Hershey company realizes, okay, we can have fun with this and make it something that people enjoy, and these kids will be making money for what they're getting to do while playing football.
And it's more attractive to other student athletes. It's more attractive for your brand when you do stuff like that. Like yeah. you're not doing it, you know, solely just for, you know, a monetary purpose. You're doing it because it is fun. And I mean,
sure.
To me personally, Reese's is the best candy out there. I'll go ahead and say it's best candy out there. Right. I'm probably wrong. People probably argue, but to me, it's best candy.
That's down. Well, let's go to how will people find us? We're running up on it, but you don't have to buzz through it.
Speed through. Yeah. So you could find us on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram at Big Ten Plus Four. Sam, unfortunately, you do have to spell out plus. Biggest pain in the butt ever, but you got to spell it out. Luckily,
I'm also the one that spells out all his text messages, so I don't mind.
Oh, you do spell out laugh out loud. It's a little weird. I'd rather you just put LOL.
Honestly, that's one of those things. I don't put LOL. But I will say I LOL'd.
That guy. You can also find us on Big Ten Plus Four. You can spell out the plus or put it in there, either one. I believe there's also links on all four of those pages. If you can't find us on one way, you can find us through another. You can click that link and it'll take you to all of our pages everywhere that we are at, including oddpodsmedia.com. We are the only sports podcast and sports show on there, but they do have another slew of great shows on there as well.
Absolutely.
You can also
all
find
the way from brisket to beer.
Ooh, that's true. Brisket, beer, politics, sports, you got it all. Like yeah. Really, it's a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
You can also find us on ASAP Network twice a week. Live, and if you want to see all the kooky stuff that we may or may not do here on the show, we plead the fifth on that. You can also find us on Spotify as well.
Tony, happy new year. We're right here. We'll be back to yep. kick off the new year and have some stuff come next Wednesday. But happy new year. Happy new year to everybody here watching, listening, however you take us in. Thank you so much from Dalton Shetler, from Sam Sprunger, and Tony Hollinsworth, all of us here at Big Ten Plus Four. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. Have an enjoyable time with those you love. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week. And we'll see you later.